Now, if you're new, you may not know this about me, but originally I am from Southwest Missouri. I grew up in Southwest Missouri, the Joplin, Carthage area. And back in 2011 is whenever a massive tornado went through Joplin, Missouri. It was an EF5 tornado, one of the deadliest tornadoes in our nation's history. It was huge. Wind speeds of up to 250 miles per hour caused $2.8 billion in damage to that town. And it was massive. And so this past Sunday night in our small group, we were sitting around and we were just kind of talking. And best part of small group is dinner. And, you know, so we're just sitting around the table and we're eating and we're sharing. And somehow the story came up because after that tornado, we sent out a few teams here from Corinth to go help some people that we knew in that area to go do some cleanup, do some rebuilding and those kind of things. And somehow we got onto this story to where we were driving out to Joplin to go work and to help do these things. And we experienced probably the worst storm that any of us had ever been in on the drive from here to Joplin, Missouri. Now, we had had to pick up Sanford and Son's truck in Memphis. I don't know if you remember Sanford and Sons, but you know that one. We had to pick his truck up in Memphis because somebody wanted to donate it to the effort in Joplin. And so Jennifer and I are driving in this like rusted out bucket of a truck from Memphis to Joplin. And that's a story for another day. So we're driving, and as soon as we cross over the Mississippi River, just all of a sudden, we're crossing into Arkansas. The skies turn green. The winds start picking up. Rain is starting to pelt down. And what we didn't know, but we found out later, is like there was a tornado happening right around us. It was only an EF0, but it was the scariest thing I've ever been in. And it was just crazy because Sanford's truck didn't go very, very fast. And so Jen and I are probably about a mile and a half behind the team in front of us. And so they're calling and they're telling us about what's going on. And so my wife is on the phone with somebody, and then like she sees something in the sky, and all of a sudden she starts like speaking in tongues or something. I mean, it was just like blah, 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 blah. And it's just like all these things going on. She doesn't even remember it. And so like our team, they got up, they were able to pull into a rest area, and they were able to get into the men's restroom. And one of our guys, Eddie Needham, like he's having to hold the door shut because the wind is trying to suck it open. I mean, it was terrifying. But Jenna and I, we're in this truck and we are over the Mississippi River on a bridge. And she's like, you got to pull over. And it's like, where? You know, I don't know that we're going to be able to make it. And so, you know, we keep going, and eventually we get across the river and there's like this overpass there. And it's like, well, I'll just pull over under that. So I pulled over under that, but then I wasn't that bright and I like pulled like right through it. And so we're just like sitting just like right out there in the midst of it. And we just sat there and we just waited it out. And as soon as that storm had come, the storm was gone. Isn't it crazy about storms? That like, they, just like that, they can show up, power, just might, and it's just terrifying. But just as soon as they're there, they're gone. Just as quick as they show up, they disappear. It was the most terrifying time I've ever had in my life, but it just amazes me just how quickly a storm can pop up in life and how quickly it can go through. And today, as we begin this brand new series called Healer, where we're looking at the miracles of Jesus, one of the things that Jesus is well known for is he was a miracle worker. And in the Gospels, in the four Gospels, there are 37 miracles recorded that Jesus did. But that's just like scratching the surface. In fact, John says in the end of his Gospel that if like all the miracles of Jesus were written down, he's like, I suppose the whole world would not contain enough books to write them all down. He did so many wonderful and so many powerful things, acts of compassion, acts of kindness, healing people, transforming things. And it was just amazing. And as we journey towards Easter, it's only 6 weeks away, we're going to just zero in and look at Jesus and his miracles and just put the power of Jesus on display for the next 6 weeks here. So if you got a Bible, we're going to be in Mark chapter 4 today. And it is a story about a storm. And it just showed up out of nowhere. But as quickly as it showed up, it was gone. Mark chapter 4, and here's what's going on. Jesus has a ministry. It's growing. People are starting to hear about him. His fame is continuing to increase. It's gotten to the place to where he can very rarely travel to go anywhere because crowds just find him. He tries to go off to secluded places to try to hide from people. They find him. He like can't get a break. He can't get away. And Jesus has had this really long, long day of preaching, miracles, and everything that you can think of, and he's just tired. He's worn out. And so he looks at his disciples, and this is what it says in verse 35. It says, he looks at his disciples and he says, hey, let's cross to the other side of the lake. Let's go over there. And so they took Jesus in the boat and they started out leaving the crowds behind. And then you see, but the crowds are like, well, we're going to follow him. And so they all jump in their boats and they're following him over to the other side. But soon a fierce storm, everybody say fierce storm, a fierce storm came up and high waves were breaking into the boat and it began to fill with water. But look at this, say this with me, Jesus was sleeping. Don't you love it? That Jesus is sleeping at the back of the boat. Huge storm, fierce storm shows up and Jesus is sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. He's taking a nap. The disciples woke him up shouting, teacher, Jesus, don't you care that we're going to drown? And when Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, silence, be still. Suddenly, the wind stopped, and there was a great calm. And then he asked them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? And the disciples were absolutely terrified. Who is this man? They asked each other. Even the winds and the waves obey him. Now, Jesus is crossing over the Sea of Galilee here, and the thing you need to know about the Sea of Galilee, it is 700 feet below sea level, but if you just go 30 miles to the north, then you've got Mount Hermon, which is 9,200 feet high. So that means within a span of 30 miles, you have 10,000 feet high down to below sea level. And so what that does is that creates like a lot of weather systems that are there because you've got the clashing of the cold air coming down from the mountain with the warm air coming up from the sea. And so the Sea of Galilee was a place where there were a lot of storms, terrifying storms. Where I grew up, we called them gully washers. I don't know what we called them in Georgia, but that's what we call them, gully washers. And these fishermen, like the disciples, they were used to them. I mean, because they're out there on the lake, and so they're used to seeing this stuff spring up around him. And so this must have been an incredible storm. In fact, the word that Mark uses right there, whenever he says fierce storm, literally you could translate it like this. It was a mega storm. Okay, it was a mega storm, and as experienced as these disciples were, as the number of storms that they had faced in their life, they were scared out of their ever-loving minds. I mean, they thought they were going to die. That's what they say to Jesus. They don't go to Jesus, hey, Jesus, we might die. They're like, dude, we're drowning. We're going down. We're going to be at the bottom of this thing before we know it. Don't you care? They're worked up because they think that their life is over right here. And I just love this because where is Jesus in the midst of a storm where his friends and his disciples are saying, we are dying? He's taking a nap, just chilling. Head on a pillow. I don't know if he's got a blanket on. I don't know if he's got Alexa playing fan sounds or not. But, you know, he's just like laying down there, taking a nap. And it's funny because the only place we have recorded in the Gospels where Jesus is sleeping is during a storm. It's the only place. I mean, we know he slept, but, you know, it is the only place that the writers actually say he was taking a nap. And, yeah, he's tired. I mean, he's been preaching all day, been working hard, been doing miracles, and he knows he's still got work to do. So he's taking a nap. Why? There's a devil to fight. There's work that still has to be done. His job isn't over yet, and so he's resting up. So you've got the disciples on the one hand, they're fretting, they're freaking out. Jesus over here, taking a nap, just chilling, just resting. Have you ever asked yourself what kind of Jesus can sleep in the bottom of a boat in the middle of a hurricane? It's a Jesus who is physically tired, but yet he's spiritually awake. He's able to sleep in the middle of a hurricane because he has faith in his Father. because he knows his father isn't going to abandon him. He knows that he still has work to do. He knows that the mission isn't complete yet, so he knows he can take a nap. He can rest because he has absolute confidence in his father in the midst of the storm. His disciples, let's just say they're not quite there yet. They're not at that point yet. And so they rudely wake him up. Like, Jesus, you got to wake up. Don't you care? We're drowning. And if you look at what he says to the storm, to the water, he gets up and the New Living Translation says, you know, silence, be still. If you've got the old KJV, the King James Version, he gets up and he says, peace, be still. You know, it's so pious. It's so holy. But the best translation, if you want to get down to the literal translation of what Jesus says here, literally you translate it this, shut up. That's literally what he says. It's quiet. Just stop it. It's shut up. And then the second thing he says is, and stay shut up. So moms and dads, you ever said that? No, I mean, I know you wouldn't say it like that strongly to your kids or anything like that, but that's what Jesus does. He's like, you stay quiet, you get quiet, and you stay quiet. I brought you into this world. I can take you out of this world, you know? And that's exactly what he does. He says, you shut up and stay shut up. And then the miracle of it all is the storm does it. That the storm hears the voice that actually created the entire universe, that spoke everything into existence, and it hears that voice for the first time since the moment of creation. And it's like, whoa, okay, I'm sorry. And so it quiets down. The rain stops. The wind dies down. But that's not all. You look there and it says, and there was a great calm, is what it says in verse 39. And that may sound like it's, you know, just repeating itself until you realize that what it's talking about is not just the wind, but he's talking about the sea as well. Because that phrase there, great calm, is actually our word mega again. So we had a mega storm, and now we have mega calm going on right here. It's a great calm. Everything is there. And so the miracle isn't just that the storm stopped, it's that the sea became as smooth as glass. Now, I'm looking at a group of people. I know you've been to the lake at some point in your life, all right? You know, and so we've been to the lake, you've been to the ocean, you've seen it, and you've watched, you know, a storm kind of roll through, and you've seen how the waters just get choppy and the things, it just gets crazy out there. And so you know that even after the wind dies down, that the lake, that the sea, that the water, it takes a little while for all the waves to finally die down. The miracle here is not just that the wind and the rain stopped whenever Jesus said the words. It's that even the sea went, all right, everybody, time to chill. And it just stopped. It's an incredible scene, isn't it? And I know that a lot of us, we may be tempted to read this and go, well, it's just a fairy tale, you know? This is just a fable. This is just something there. It's just a nice little message out there to just kind of help us see how Jesus is there in the midst of difficulty. But I want to remind you, and I'm going to do this for the next 6 weeks, this really happened. This is not a fairy tale. This is not a fable. This is not just some story that people tell. This really happened. And one of the reasons we know that this really happened is because of the way the story continues. It isn't just, you know, and Jesus calmed the storm and they all lived happily ever after. What happens is they actually bring in this story to where it looks like that Jesus turns around and he yells at the disciples. Now, who's telling the story about Jesus calming the storm? It's the disciples. They're the ones who are telling this story. And if this didn't really happen, you want to know what you leave out? You know, it's just like, and we were like, oh yeah, of course. We knew this is exactly what you were going. Go, Jesus, man. You're the best. But that's not what they do. They tell us, they give us the dirty details about themselves. We didn't get it, man. And so he turned around and he looked at us and he's like, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? And so what he's saying to them is, why did you lose heart? Why did you let this storm turn you into a coward? Where did your faith go? Have you misplaced it? Do we need to go looking for it? Do we need to put a tile on it so that we can ping it? Where did your faith go? Where is it? Now, we read through this and we may think, man, Jesus, give them a break, man. I mean, they just thought that they were about to die. They're in the middle of a hurricane. I mean, give them a little slack, but he goes at them, and there's a reason why, and here's why. Because the greatest danger to the disciples was not the wind and the waves. The greatest danger was their unbelief. That's what was so dangerous for them. Because listen to me, friends, hear me. Our greatest problems are within us, not around us. It's what's inside of us, not what's going on around of us. And so that's why he looks at his disciples and look at what he says. He's like, do you still have no faith? That one little word, still. He's like, you've heard me teach. You've watched me perform miracles. You've seen me do these things, and yet you still aren't believing. He's like, bro, your faith, it is your unbelief that is causing your fear. And it's your fear that's making you question whether or not I really care about you. And so how did the disciples respond? With more fear is what they do. They just get more afraid. In fact, Mark actually uses the word mega again. So we've gone from a mega storm to mega calm to now we have mega fear. Okay, and so he's just like, they were just like greatly, greatly terrified. And they are afraid now because they were scared before Jesus saved them. And then they're scared after he saved them because they were scared when they were in danger. And now they're even more scared when they've been saved. Why? Because they had been in the presence of a powerful storm before, but they had never been in the presence of a greater power like Jesus before. And that caused them to go, who is this guy? What is going on here with him? And next week, we'll see this story continue. We're actually going to be in Mark chapter 4 and 5 for, I think, 4 of the 6 weeks here. So you can kind of put your bookmark right there. But we're going to see that the power just continues to be revealed. But so we're going to hit the stopping point on the story right now. And I just want to ask and make a couple of observations here about this story just to kind of help us put some legs to this. And so the first observation I would make is this, is that following Jesus doesn't prevent storms. Following Jesus doesn't prevent storms. Friends, I don't know where you have come from today and to this point. I don't know where every single one of you are in your faith, but I want to help you understand this, that just because you start following Jesus does not mean that every storm in your life is going to disappear. It doesn't mean that you're never going to see the winds. It doesn't mean that you're never going to experience the waves any longer. There are no stormless seas. And if you're going to be a sailor, you better learn how to deal with the storms in your life. Following him doesn't prevent storms in your life. Now, a lot of us, we think that the reason why we experience storms is because we've been disobedient. And sometimes that is what takes place. You know, you go to the Old Testament book of Jonah. Jonah experienced a storm in his life because he was disobedient. But here, the disciples are not experiencing a storm because of their disobedience. If you actually look at verse 35, they're experiencing a storm because of their obedience. What does Jesus say in verse 35? He says, let's go to the other side. And that is a command. He's like, we're going to get in the boat. We're going to the other side. And so this storm is precisely because the disciples obeyed Jesus. That's why they're experiencing the storm. Following Jesus can bring storms into your life. Now, here's the thing. Where is Jesus headed? He's headed to the Gerasenes. And we're going to look at that in the next couple of weeks. But as he goes over there, this is like we're leaving the land of Kansas and we're going to the land of Oz. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, once we get into the Gerasenes, because now we're not just dealing with Jewish people. Now we're not just dealing, you know, with familiarity stuff. He's actually headed over to a brand new territory. It's a new mission. Specifically, he's headed over to do a few things. He's going to heal a demoniac. He's going to raise a little girl from the dead. He's on a mission to defeat evil. He's breaking the curse of the devil in this land. And so can I ask you a question? Since Jesus is headed over to do all of those things, is it any surprise that a storm breaks out? See, here's the thing, friends. When you get on the boat and whenever you start making your way to the other side that Jesus has commanded you to go to, don't be surprised when you encounter a storm. Whenever you decide, it's like, okay, it's time for me to start using my gifts. I want to use these things that God has given me, and I want to start serving people in his church. Whenever you decide, I want to start honoring the Lord financially. I want to get out of debt. I want to tithe. I want to give. Whenever you decide, you know, that you're going to start to speak up for the voiceless, for the orphan, for the widow. Whenever you decide that you're going to surrender your life to Jesus, you're going to give your life to him. Whenever you decide you're going to get baptized, whenever all these things are going on in your life, do not be surprised whenever you experience a storm, because you want to know who has decided that he doesn't want you to do that? It is your enemy. It's the accuser. It is Satan himself. And he is powerful enough to try and stop you and to send storms your way. And so whenever you make a decision and you say, I'm going to obey Jesus, I'm going to follow him, don't be surprised whenever you start to experience the financial storm, the relationship storm, the health storm. Don't be surprised whenever you start to see things like your kids walking away from the faith. Don't be surprised whenever you start to experience abuse and rumors and things going on behind your back. Because here's what I know. When you're on your way to storm the gates of hell, you should not be surprised when the gates of hell send a storm your way. He is not happy whenever you decide that you're going to be obedient. See, sometimes following Jesus brings the storm. But there's also this. Sometimes Jesus sends us into the storm. See, sometimes storms find us, other times storms are sent, and sometimes God may lead us into the storm itself. In his book, Spiritual Depression, which sounds super uplifting, Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, the old preacher, he writes this. He says, God permits storms. He permits difficulties. He permits the winds to blow and the billows to roll, and everything may seem to be going wrong, and we ourselves to be in jeopardy. Friends, we can find ourselves in the middle of a storm because that's where God led us to be. And he led us right into the middle of the storm because God's guidance doesn't always steer us away from the storm. Sometimes he sends us into it. I view it as a part of my life mission to try to correct a lie that maybe you've heard before. Have you guys ever heard the lie that the safest place to be is the center of God's will? You ever heard that? Now, you may not know that's a lie, but I'm here to help you today. The safest place to be is not the center of God's will. It's the best place to be. It's the only place to be. But it's not the safest place. And you're like, well, Adam, why can you say that? Well, because if I read through the Bible and I start reading through these guys and these gals whose story is they were at the center of God's will, it's like, who, was Paul in the center of God's will? It's like, I would think so. Was it safe? I don't know. Tell me about all the times in prison. Tell me about the times he was, you know, whipped. Tell me about the times he was like stoned to death with rocks. Tell me about the time, you know, that he was persecuted. Tell me about all these other kind of things. That doesn't sound very safe to me. You know, I start reading through the stories of the disciples and how their life went, and every single one of them ends up, you know, they end up being killed for their faith. It's like, well, that doesn't sound very safe to me. And I even look at Jesus. If there's anybody who is at the center of God's will, it seems like Jesus could be there. Didn't seem very safe for him. It's not the safest place to be. It's the only place to be. God may lead you into a storm, and that's okay. Because it's when we're in the storm that we remember, I don't chart the course. Jesus does. I'm not the master and commander of my ship. He is. And if he's going to lead me into the middle of a storm, he probably has a reason. And it could just be this. Here's the deal. You don't develop your faith in the calm. Your faith grows in the crisis. And he leads us there to get us to a place where there's no place to look but up. To the only one who's worthy of our faith. So, following Jesus doesn't prevent storms. Sometimes Jesus sends us into the storm. So how do we navigate the storm? And here's what I would say to you. Look to the sleeping Jesus. Look to the sleeping Jesus. Now, I don't get to fly a lot, but I get to fly once or twice a year. And I don't know, you get up there in a big metal tube, 35,000 feet above, you know, the ground, and a bunch of air, all kinds of things going on. You're bound to experience turbulence at some point. And, you know, whenever turbulence comes up, it's a little freaky, you know, and the plane starts to shake and things start getting a little weird. Craziest flight I ever had was like, it was like some podunk plane, airport in Illinois, and like the landing was so bad, everybody clapped whenever it was over, you know, because they're like, oh my gosh. But anyway, you know, whenever you're up there in the air and the turbulence hit, where is it you need to look to see how things are actually going? And it's not out the window. Do you want to know who you look to whenever the plane is starting to shake? The flight attendant. That's where you look. You put your focus on the flight attendant, because here's the deal. If they're still like handing out pretzels and passing them out, do you want a Diet Coke? Do you want a Coke Zero? Do you want a ginger ale? Do you want a club soda? What do you want? And they're still pushing that cart up through, hitting you in the elbow and the knee, and they're still doing all that stuff. Guess what? Everything's fine. But if the flight attendant, if they sit down buckled up and they start going like this, then you panic, right? It's like, oh no, we're going down, you know? It's like, how are we going to survive this? Because they're the experts, right? They're the ones that have been through this so many other times. If they're fine, you can be fine. And if Jesus can sleep in the middle of a hurricane, if he can be fine in the midst of your storm, you can be fine. And you can just sit there and go, wait a second, he's got it. If he's asleep during this, then that means I can rest. If Jesus isn't worried about it, I don't have to worry about it. There is not a storm in your life, friends. Listen to me. There's not a storm in your life that Jesus is in heaven watching down on you, and he's just sitting there going, man, I don't know how I'm going to get him out of this. You know, he's not like pacing the floor of heaven, walking back and forth, just going, oh, man, God, how are we going to do this? I mean, do you see that? That's a mess. He's fine. And if he's able to rest, you can rest. See, notice what Jesus says to the disciples there. What he's saying, he's like, why are you so afraid? Why are you so terrified? Do you still have no faith? He's looking at his disciples. He's like, listen, the reason you were afraid, it's because your faith wasn't in the right place. And he goes after them, doesn't he? He's like, why are you so afraid, man? What's wrong with you? And he doesn't just look at them and say, hey, you just needed to believe more. Then everything would have been fine. He says to them, your faith isn't in the right place. They wake him up and they're going, you don't care. You don't love us. We're dying. You're abandoning us in our greatest hour of need. And here's the thing. I know every single person here who has ever tried to live a life of faith in this world has felt like that at some point in your life. You feel like you're sinking. It feels like everything is going wrong. And it feels like God is asleep. He's just not around, doesn't care, isn't aware. And so they wake him up and they're like, dude, you have abandoned us. You're asleep in our time that we need you the most. You don't care. You can't love us. Because if you loved us, we wouldn't be going through a storm like this. You wouldn't let us do that. If you really loved us, we wouldn't be about to be at the bottom of this lake. Our boat wouldn't be going down. If you loved us, you wouldn't be letting us go through this. And what does he do? Stands up, calms the storm, but then he turns around to them, and what does he say? Sorry about that, guys. You know, I was tired. Just need a little bit of a break for a bit there. I understand how you feel. Your feelings are valid. Nah. What does he say? Yo, why were you afraid? Why were you so scared? And they're like, what do you mean? Why were we afraid? We were afraid you didn't love us, because if you loved us, then this wouldn't be happening to us. And he says, that's why you're wrong. Because you're starting from the wrong point. You should have known better, man. I do allow people I love to go through storms. I can love someone and still let them go through a storm. You didn't need to panic. Where's your faith? And then it says they're scared. And you want to know why they're scared now? It's because Jesus is as unmanageable as the storm itself. The storm has infinite power. You can't control that. Jesus has infinitely more power than the storm. And guess what? You can't control him either. And you're like, well, man, well, what's the difference? There's a big difference. You ready? The storm doesn't love you. Jesus does. And since he loves you, you can know that there's a reason for the storm. Because he knows sometimes you need the storm in order to be able to see his glory. Peace isn't found in the easy life. Real peace is only found whenever you are in the presence of the one who can take a nap in the middle of a hurricane. That's where peace is found. So my friends, never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. Never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. So here's my challenge to you this week. I want you to use what you have learned in a storm to help someone through theirs. What have you learned in the midst of a storm that can be used to help someone else through the storm that they're in right now? You know, like in this room, I know there's some of y'all, you've survived, you know, cancer, you've survived health scares. And so you've made it through that. Jesus was with you. He was present with you through that storm. He has brought you to all the way to the other side. Then I want you to use that, and I want you to go help someone fight theirs, okay? And you go help them fight for their faith in the midst of the difficulty that is there. Some of y'all, you have overcome unfaithfulness in marriage. You've been cheated on. You've been betrayed. You've gone through divorce, and you've come through on the other side, and you're watching a friend or you're watching people. They're going through the same thing. You help them learn how to forgive. Give and how you were able to be able to grow through that season. Some of y'all, you climbed out of debt. You've gotten to a place where financially you feel like, you know, you're honoring God with everything that is there. Then you use that and you tell other people it can be done. Maybe you're 178 days sober, you know, and you've made it 178 days. You just say, I'm going to tell other people how Christ has set me free. You've lost a loved one. You lost your spouse. You lost a parent. You lost a child, and you've been able to manage it and go through and to go through the stages of grief, come through to the other side, then you help others go through their grief as well. You use what you have learned in the midst of a storm and you go out and you help someone through theirs. He allowed you to go through that storm. Don't waste it. Help someone in the midst of their own storm. Because here's what I know. You cannot control your situation. You cannot control when a storm starts. You can't control how it hits. You can't control how long it lasts. You can't control what people do. You can't control what people think. But you can control where you place your faith. And where is our faith? It is in the one that we say, who is this man that even the winds and the waves obey him? Never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. Because sometimes God sends us into storms. Other times, it's just because we're following Jesus. We're being obedient. The storms come up. Now, I'll end with this one last thought because this is just too good not to share with y'all. You know, reading through this stuff this week, one of the things that a lot of preachers and writers have noted here that what Mark is doing in Mark chapter 4 is he's using language that's almost identical to Jonah chapter 1. You guys know the story of Jonah, and he's out there, and it's just remarkable if you compare these two stories, how close they are together. I mean, think about it. Both Jesus and Jonah are out in the sea on a boat. Both Jesus and Jonah's boats are overtaken by a storm. Both Jesus and Jonah are asleep in the midst of a storm. Both the sailors, in both stories, the sailors come to the sleeper, and they're like, dude, we're dying, okay? Then there's this miraculous intervention by God. The sea is calmed, and in both stories, the last thing that we read is that the sailors are even more scared after the storm than they were before in the storm. It's amazing. Almost identical stories, but there's just one difference. One little difference between the story of Jesus and Jonah. Because in the story of Jonah, in the midst of it, he says to the sailors, he's like, there's only one thing you can do. If you want to live, I have to die. If I die, you'll live. And so they throw him into the waters, and that's how the story ends in Jonah 1. And you're like, yeah, that's different. That didn't happen here, right? And that's the one difference between the two stories. Or is it? What if Mark is trying to get across the fact that the stories really aren't that different at all? You stand back, you look a little bit, because in Matthew chapter 12, this is what Jesus says. He says, I am the true Jonah. I am him. That's who I am. One greater than Jonah is here. And what does he mean by that? It means that he calmed the storm and the wind and the waves, and he saved his disciples. But Jesus says someday he's going to calm all storms. He's going to still all the waves. He's going to destroy destruction. He's going to break brokenness. He's going to kill death. All storms are going to be gone. He's going to still all of them for us. That's what he promises. That's what the kingdom of God means. And you go, well, how can he do that? How can he calm all the storms? And the answer is this: he can only do that because whenever he was on the cross, he was thrown into the ultimate storm. He was thrown into the only storm that can actually sink you and me. Because there's only one storm that can really sink you in this life, and that's our sin. And so what Jesus did is he went into the ultimate storm of eternal justice. He bowed his head and he went right into it for your sake and for my sake. And he didn't flinch. And he was demolished. And he paid for our sins on the cross. And hear me, friend. Whenever we see that he did that, whenever that is something that is at the very core of our identity, we'll never say, "Jesus, don't you care?" Because we'll know that he does. Because listen, if he didn't abandon you in that storm, what would make you think he'll abandon you in the one you're facing right now? Who is this man? Even the winds and the waves obey him. Turn your eyes to the one who calms the storm. And so Jesus, today, that is our prayer. That our hearts, that our minds, that our eyes, every part of us would be just turned directly towards you. And that we would have ultimate confidence that you're not going to abandon us in this storm. And so, God, we say thank you for that. Thank you for the assurance. But we also say, please forgive us for whenever our faith is misplaced, whenever we do allow the winds and the waves to distract us from the reality and the truth that we know to be true. That you do love us, that you do care for us. Forgive us. Help us overcome our unbelief. And God, for my friends who are sitting out here or maybe watching online right now who are in the midst of a storm, they're not for sure if you led them into it, if it's a consequence of their being obedient to you. It really doesn't matter. They just know that they feel like they're about to drown. I pray that today would be a reminder and a call up to say, if you didn't abandon me into my sin, you will not abandon me in this. And that we will be people who look at you with awe and wonder. The one who stills all the storms. But until that day, whenever the ultimate storm is finally calmed, please give us strength and endurance as we continue to follow you. And we pray this in your wonderful and your powerful name. Amen, amen. And amen.